Good morning, everyone. While Lily is getting talk online, maybe we should start because we are already 5 minutes into late in the session. We have some exciting topics on the tap. So we will start with the first one with the Sue, Alan, and Peter to talk about the ISB work plan update.
Perhaps if I made one of the points coming up in our private session was whether or not we could have sort of any other business slot. Actually, it was Kevin that had a specific point. I just wonder if that would fit in one of the other topics. It's
in terms of agenda?
Yeah, in terms of the agenda. So, Kevin, you've got a point about specific transitional issues. Do you think it fits into one of the other slots?
Work plan, because it's a transition, it's...
So perhaps if we could pick this point up during this discussion.
Sure. Are you talking about transitions, about the various standards that are... Okay.
He's got a specific issue in South Africa, actually related to his interaction with the SEC, which I think he's best placed to explain.
When we finish the session.
Good.
All right, so good morning. I'll start off talking about the large four convergence projects, and then Alan and Peter will chip in with some of the other projects. So looking at the work plan on the second page, starting at the top with financial instruments, maybe if I just give you an update on where we're at with the various phases. So the exposure draft on limited amendments to IFRS 9 classification and measurement is out for comment at the moment. And the comment period ends in the next few weeks at the end of March. On the second phase of the impairment project, the new exposure draft went out last week with a comment period ending on the 5th of July. With both of those projects, they're joint with the FASB, so the plan will be that once the comment periods on our respective documents are finished, that there will be joint board meetings where the boards will share the feedback that we've received from each of our different proposals. Our classification and measurement is essentially a converged ED, but with slightly different words, so we'll compare the feedback we've got on those. Impairment, as you may know, we actually have different proposals, but we will still share the feedback that we have from each of the different proposals, and we will have a session where the two boards will try and find ways to bring the proposals closer together. So we're still optimistic that we might find a way forward that's more converged, even on the impairment project. On hedge accounting, the general hedge accounting model, we put a review draft or a near sort of final version of the document on our website last September. We received about 40 letters in response to that. At our January meeting this year, the staff took a series of papers to the board where we gave the main feedback that we'd received from the review draft, and we proposed some changes to the review draft in response to that feedback. Of particular interest maybe to corporates was a change to deal with cross-currency basis risk on cross-currency swaps for hedging. Where we're at with hedge accounting at the moment is that the EFRAG raised a question about the interaction between IFRS 9 and hedge accounting for macro hedge accounting, and we hope that we'll be able to discuss that issue at the April board meeting and then proceed to finalise the new hedge accounting chapter of IFRS 9. So that's financial instruments.
Can I just, perhaps it's, later on this afternoon in one of the papers, Sue, you cover what's being proposed for transitional arrangements. Perhaps you could you just explain to us how you see the transitional arrangements? You've got the different components of IFRS 9. If I understand it, you are proposing to, allow people to. Do I get it right that you can use different parts of IFRS 9 independently? You don't have to implement IFRS 9 all in one go.
Yeah, maybe we'll talk about what we have now and what we're proposing. So at the moment, there's already two versions of IFRS 9 in existence. I don't think we'll ever do a phased project like this ever again. It's not while I've got any say anyway. But at the moment, somebody can just apply the classification and measurement requirements for financial assets, or they could choose to apply the classification and measurement requirements both for assets and liabilities. And when we finish hedge accounting, an entity could choose to apply IFRS 9 for assets, liabilities, and hedge accounting. So you can do just assets, assets and liabilities, or assets and liabilities and hedge accounting. Now, it gets even more complicated once we finish impairment and once we make changes to classification and measurement. So in the classification and measurement in ED, the board's actually suggesting we should cut down the amount of choice because it's getting too confusing for everybody involved, particularly users of financial statements. So what's proposed in the classification and measurement ED is that for the earlier versions of IFRS 9, you'll still have those choices. So, for example, corporates who want to use hedge accounting could adopt hedge accounting in conjunction with classification and measurement as is. But once we finish IFRS 9, if you haven't already adopted it, then you'll need to adopt the whole package. So you'll need to adopt classification and measurement, impairment and hedge accounting as a bundle. And basically, once we finish IFRS 9, there'll be a six-month window left for people to early adopt the hedge accounting package. But if you haven't adopted that, then you'll need to adopt everything as one suite.
Okay. But then I saw somewhere that it looks like you can just adopt the
own credit.
Yeah. So
there's one exception to that.
What you just said.
I was waiting for you to digest that. Then there was one exception, which was for own credit. So even when IFRS 9 is finalised, if you want to, you can continue to apply IAS 39 and just present the own credit changes in OCI. So just pick up that one new piece of IFRS 9.
You know, we listen to opinions given to us.
I think we need perhaps you're going to put it in the standard, but we need a sort of a diagram, yes. You know, about...
Yes.
If you've adopted paragraph 6, you need to consider paragraph 27.
Something like that. But macro hedging will be scoped out. I mean, that's going to be... You're not going to wait for macro hedging before you've said IFRS 9 is done.
Yeah, we want IFRS 9 to be finished and available for people to use. And we'll simultaneously be working on the macro hedge accounting project. We hope to issue a discussion paper on macro hedge accounting around the middle of the year. That was separate to IFRS 9.
So what's your for IFRS 9 excluding macro hedging, and what is the latest effective date? Is it still 15, 16, 17?
That's a good question. At the moment, the mandatory effective date in IFRS 9 is the 1st of January 2015, but we always allow at least 18 months between when we finalise the standard and the mandatory date. So given our comment period for impairment ends after the 30th of June, we've asked a question in the impairment ED that we published last week about the lead time people think they need for impairment. And as a consequence, what people think the mandatory effective date for IFRS 9 should be. So once we have that piece of information from that exposure draft comment period, we'll re-deliberate the mandatory effective date of IFRS 9. But it will be moved. The question is, how far will it be moved? And we need the impairment feedback to make a decision on what a sensible lead time is.
Okay. And if I may, just a quick comment. I mean, I read the FT summary of the impairment standard and the differences between your standard and US GAAP. So there's no way you're going to get alignment between US GAAP and the ISP solution.
Not so quick.
You mean they may align to us?
Well, at the moment, obviously, we're in quite different places. So the FASB have said that they prefer a model where lifetime expected losses are recognised essentially on day one. And we've said that we think it's more appropriate to recognise a portion of losses at inception, and only when an asset deteriorates would you recognise lifetime losses.
It will depend on the responses we get on both sides of the proposals.
Exactly. So we need to see what people's responses to the lifetime model, how big the numbers are, just how big are the differences between the two. And we need feedback from people about whether we have simplified sufficiently this concept of deterioration for them to be able to operationalise it. Once the boards have got that set of information, then we can see whether there's more common ground.
Will you consider the possibility for insurance company to apply at the same time IFRS 9 and IFRS 4?
At the moment, given the lead time for insurance, what we're hoping we'll be able to do is have a situation where before IFRS 9 becomes mandatory, that new IFRS 4 would be available, so that an insurance company should be able to apply IFRS 4 at the same time it has to apply IFRS 9. That's our current thinking.
It's a bit optimistic, isn't it, that we are finished in time with insurance. Depends whether we postpone to 1/1/16 or 17.
It's more possible if we move the IFRS 9 date, yes. Okay, so that's financial instruments. Insurance. The exposure draft on insurance is due to be published before the middle of the year, so May/June we plan to publish the ED on insurance contracts. That will be a full exposure draft, so you'll see all of the entire insurance contracts ED and basis for conclusions. But the questions will focus on five key areas, so it will be a targeted re-exposure, and then there'll be one general question about the interaction between all of the parts of the standard. So there will be a question that basically says, does it all work as a whole? Is it operational, like a sort of review draft or fatal flaw as well? But we're trying to target it given it's our second exposure, and it's important we finish the insurance contract standard. Leases. We're working on balloting the exposure draft at the moment for the lease model jointly with the FASB, and the current timeline for the leasing project is that we hope that we'll be publishing that exposure draft around May this year with a 120-day comment period.
That will be the same on both sides of the Atlantic. That will be the same period of time.
Yes, same period of time, and I think essentially an identical exposure draft, except for S's and Z's, as we say. And last but not least, particularly for you, is the revenue recognition project. We're close to finishing the re-deliberations on revenue recognition, and that will then enable us hopefully to move to the final IFRS on revenue recognition. The deliberations should be finished shortly, and then we'll move to balloting, we hope, around the middle of the year, but probably a little bit past June, that the final revenue recognition IFRS would be available.
So we've got a separate session on that, so I guess we save our comments until
yes.
then.
Yes.
So perhaps I can just pick up a few of the other projects, some smaller ones. You're going to have you'll see if you have a look at our work plan, it's actually, I was quite proud of the fact that we got down from 3 pages to one at one stage, and now it's growing back up to about three pages or so. Part of that is because of the number of narrower scope changes that we're making through the implementation program. You've got a separate session on the interpretations committee, and that implementation is part of that, so I won't go into much of the detail there, but you should be aware that we actually have quite a few narrow scope changes being proposed to some of the standards. So, you know, we've been asked to be more responsive, and that's one of the consequences of doing so. But the two bigger projects that we have that we're making some progress on are rate-regulated activities. That's in two phases. Okay, the first one is an interim standard that will allow some grandfathering of current practice. At the moment, it's in a pre-ballot phase for us. We expect to have that out in the next couple of months. But it will actually allow people, first-time adopters is the proposal, any first-time adopters will be allowed to carry forward their existing rate regulation, not quite carry forward their accounting, but essentially continue to account for rate-regulated activities. What we're doing, though, is that we are stripping it out of any other assets or liabilities that exist in your balance sheet and income statement, so that if you present property, plant and equipment, you don't put in there the rate regulator components and include those in PP&E. They have to be presented on an IFRS basis. What you do is you take the numbers out and you end up with either a net debit or a net credit, and that's your rate regulated activities or net balance. And that there's some other disclosures that go with that as well. At the same time, we're doing the work on the major project, because ultimately the question is whether or not that net debit or credit actually meets the definition of an asset or a liability. And so it either will disappear ultimately from the accounts because they don't, will some of them will be recognised. And you know, whether it's recognised as a licence in terms of an asset or whether it, what we think the right accounting is, that's what the big project's about. And we expect to produce a request for information in the next month or so. That's starting to, so we can put together a discussion paper we expect to have out in about October, November of this year. Okay, so that's a major part of the project. The other one that we're looking at, an ED will go out, is on bearer biological assets. This is essentially dealing with fuel in the yard. It's the vines themselves, not the fruit. Palm oil, it's the trees, not the actual oil, for example. And essentially, those bearer plants, because it's limited to plants, will be classified as property, plant, and equipment. So use the PP&E model. It pushes you into IAS 16, and that's what the proposal is. So we expect to have that, I think, balloted and released within the next 2 months or so, and then we'll see what the feedback is.
It's good that you already have the P in PP&E.
Plant, exactly. I did suggest that they change it to property, plants. But that was a bit subtle.
It's a good one.
The other part of our work program, you'll see that if you have a look at our work program, it's got quite a lot of our research projects on there as well. And we're just starting quite slowly to feed those into our work streams internally anyway. And at the moment, I just want to give you a bit of a signal because it's bound to come up, I suspect, today anyway. One of the projects we have is discount rates, and that's having a look at the objectives that we have within our standards on discount rates and the consistency across the standards. We've been asked to have a look at that at a research level to see or ensure that we actually do have consistent use of discount rates and the clarity of the objectives. And the reason I raise that is because we've been hearing a lot recently about IAS 19 and the discount rate for pensions. There is a little bit of activity you'll hear about in the next session. There's a paper going to Interpretations Committee tomorrow or Wednesday on discount rates. But really, people are asking us to look more fundamentally at that because there are these concerns about assessment of deep enough markets, whether you're trying to calculate or estimate what a high credit quality discount rate is. We tried 3 years ago to simplify what we thought was a reasonably good solution, but somebody else described it to me last week as being basically if it meant that the discount rate was higher than their current one, they supported it, or lower, they didn't support it. And it was almost 50-50 around the world as to the proposal we put out. I think it's going to be very difficult for us to do anything short-term other than the work that the Interpretations Committee is doing now, but that, to me, of our 10 or so research projects, that's one I would give higher priority to. So we're trying to work with the Australians and the Hong Kong standard setters have done some work on this, and we've identified a staff member who's almost certain to be allocated the project, and we'll start to give that our higher priority in terms of research. So I don't know if any questions on that. I was going to mention some things on effect analysis as well, but if there are any other questions on the work program or transition, perhaps.
So going on with the intangible asset research project?
Yeah, that's a fairly big one. I described it, I don't know how helpful it was, as being similar in a way to insurance, in that there are some quite strongly embedded practices, and whatever we do is going to be, it's going to need to be managed very carefully. I suggested that we look at intangibles in the same way that we look at exploratory activities, such as oil and gas activities, because there are quite strong similarities in some cases between exploring the research or type expenditure, exploring for minerals, as there are sometimes when exploring for compounds in the pharmaceutical industry. And so trying to get the right sort of accounting across a wide range of both intangibles and sort of investment-type activities where you're exploring was important. So I think it's just going to take a bit of time for that one. There's been quite a work done again through Australia. They've done a lot of work on intangibles. I'm keen to get that going, but we're going to need to get other standard setters to help us with that.
I mean, your research project list has a number of very meaty topics in it. So I guess this came out from the from the consultation. So, I mean, what sort of priorities? Are they all the same priority? I mean, have you made a commitment to the trustees to...
No, what we've done is we've identified that these are the projects that we're going to give priority more generally to over the next 3 years. But within that list, we actually haven't given a higher priority. I think that's something we're going to need to do over the next few months, is to sit down and see. Discount rates, to me, is a higher priority because of the concerns we keep hearing about pensions, for example, and some other issues that keep coming back to Interpretations Committee. And it's a matter of, if you look at these, I think the intangible asset project is a big one, and so is income taxes. They're major projects, and so we have to identify, you know, what the deliverable is going to be over the next 3 years as well. Some of these, I think it's going to be broader research. In other cases, a much narrower focused discussion paper, for example. But again, these are all about defining the problem, because people think that there is a problem with discount rates. That's what they told us. Same with income taxes, same with intangibles. Not clear that we all agree on what that problem is. And so what the research is about is trying to make sure that we can specify very clearly what the financial reporting issue is before we commit in any way to doing any sort of standards level project.
Can I add a couple of things to that? I mean, you said there's no priority, but there is one sort of priority in there, which is in the feedback statement on the gender consultation, we said that three of these research areas aren't ones that we're intending to research ourselves over the next 3 years or so, but we're hoping other people will do some for us. And that's income taxes, pensions, and share-based payments. And just a postscript on discount rates, the International Actuarial Association recently issued an exposure draft of some guidance on discount rates. Quite a long paper, it's sort of 300 pages or so. And that's pitched more at the practical end of how to do it once you've decided what the objective is.
I'm wondering, Peter, whether the project on IS 37, in fact, is not on a parking lot for some time, and because we have the conceptual framework discussions on liabilities first, and really this project is totally would result, could be dropped if we decide in the conceptual framework not to do anything, then we don't need to have this project.
That's right. I mean, there were different strands to the IS 37 project as well. There were parts related to recognition, there were parts related to measurement, there were parts that were sort of smaller tidying up as well. So I think if we did restart that, we'd need to think about what the scope is as well. But clearly there's a very close link to what we're doing on the framework.
Peter, what about FICE?
Right, that's an abbreviation I hate, by the way, but that's the project on what we've called financial instruments with characteristics of equity, which is all about the distinction between liabilities and equity. That's clearly linked to what we're doing in the conceptual framework, and I think we need to do some research work at the kind of standards level at the same time as we look at it in the framework, but I guess we'll come back to that this afternoon.
The framework's not going to solve everything, and we're going to need to do standards level activity in several areas afterwards, and so that's why we've kept these particular projects live.
And foreign currency translation, perhaps tied in a little bit with reporting in the high inflation economies, how do you see what's the problem there that you'd
well,
think
the foreign,
you have to tackle?
The foreign currency issue is one that the Koreans in particular have come to us with. It's long-term, in the shipbuilding industry in particular, when you've got long-term contracts and you get fluctuations in currency, and it, of course it goes through income, and they're saying that that's not really reflective of what the economics are to them. And the proposal was to come up with some sort of averaging of the exchange rate, but it's not clear that that's a viable solution either. The Koreans have done a lot of work on that, taken it to national standard setters, and we think it's just a test. We think it's worth bringing that to the board, and at least through a discussion paper, because the outcome of that might be that we don't think there is a problem that needs to be fixed, or it could be that there is some work to do. So that's what the foreign currency one is, more the longer-term contracts.
Maybe I should say a word there about the hyperinflation as well and the link to the framework, because I suspect we might forget this afternoon. In the work on the framework, we're not planning in this project to look at what the existing framework says about capital maintenance. So we'll just carry that forward. And that's really for a couple of reasons. One is that capital maintenance by itself is a pretty big area, and it could easily overwhelm the rest of the stuff we need to do on the framework. And secondly, if we're going to look at hyperinflation again at some point anyway, that seems like a more natural time to think about questions related to inflation, capital maintenance and the like. So we're planning just to carry forward those sections in this work on the framework.
Because, you know, especially in view of what's happened recently in Venezuela, I don't know if other people have had a lot of questions, but obviously there's a fundamental difference in how IFRS preparers account for, say, the Venezuelan devaluation compared to US GAAP. You know, personally, I'm not sure that IAS 29 is a great model, to be honest. But.
Yeah, and again, this is the South Americans have done some work on this, and it's come to us, but hasn't been aired publicly. So we think if we take that work, put it into a discussion paper, a research paper, and get it out for comment, then we can actually see whether people agree with what the issues are. They're talking about higher inflation, sort of the 40% as opposed to hyperinflation. They're saying when you've got persistent high inflation, 40%, it undermines the credibility of the financial statements. So, again, it's more of a, you know, as I say, it's a research or defining the problem to see whether or not we should do something about it.
So, I mean, personally, I think you do need to look hard at IAS 29, because it's not that easy to apply. So I think there are some issues there that need to be fixed.
Anything else we need to talk, or should we take Kevin's point on the transition and spend another 10 minutes on that?
Actually, Sue introduced it perfectly with the 18-month gap that is tried to exist. There's a request, maybe we can widen, I know you don't want to hear that 18-month gap, particularly now with there's 1,000 foreign private issuers at the SEC. IFRS requires the first period presented. The SEC requires 3 income statements. And so, effectively, this year, I'm already in 2015 statements because I have to consider those comparatives when I adopt in 2015, because 2013 is my first period presented. And to avoid hindsight, I have to start comparing the comparatives now. And so we hit the problem now with IFRIC 20 because it was such a short gap. We're trying to prove that we didn't use hindsight to our auditors in determining what our IFRIC 20 adoption is. With all those other statements, that's the process we're adopting. So, you know, we need to either think about how we transition. Under US GAAP, you have those modified transition and so forth, which takes away some of that problem when there's a short gap. So just, you know, it's a consideration for how you do transition. For those of us that now have to do 3 income statements because the statement's live now. And so in the past it wasn't such an issue, but now was it nearly 500 Canadians went into the SEC as IFRS adopters. So it's becoming an issue for the SEC entities. Craig Ollinger said he's willing to listen. But, you know, willing to listen and not having to do 3 years.
what did he mean by willing to listen?
Well, we raised a question and he was sort of saying, well, maybe you don't, if your home country allows only 1 year transition, then don't do
the second year.
And it became, well, now I end up with trying to persuade the auditors I have the same opinion under both when one first period presented doesn't actually apply the accounting standards that was the basis of preparation. So it's not a solution. The answer is finding a more rational way in which transition works.
Let me understand that. If the SEC is ready to say, okay, under IFRS, you only have 2 years, not 3 years, which is good news.
No, he said he's willing to listen.
Yes, that's true.
So you would put your year 13, but you wouldn't restate.
What I mean, 1 year, 1 year unrestated and yes. 2 years comparable under the new standard,
yeah.
Which would be good news if they can accept it. Then the auditors, they sign off under IFRS.
Yeah.
IFRS requires only 2 years comparative. And a third year can be not comparable. So why would the auditors, or maybe Mary has a more recent view than I have, because I've been an auditor long, long ago, but why would they have any problem?
Because of the first, when you're preparing, when you put up your basis of preparation, you're going to state what your accounting policies are. It's very difficult to say these are the accounting policies for year 13, these are the accounting policies for 14 and 15.
Why not say if the third year, which is comparative, is not really comparable because it's under the old gap, which differs by the non-application of whatever.
I think there's even a problem within IFRS because I think our general phrasing is for the earliest year presented, and the earliest year presented would be 13 in the 15-14-13 scenario, and it's compounded by the requirement for SEC filing purposes for the auditor's report to address each of the periods presented, you know, to rather than saying this year was comparative.
Yeah, so it's just a plea for considering transition. Because so but now 1,000 foreign private issuers, they're all large companies. So these are major multinationals that it's impacting.
Well, at least in the revenue recognition, it's not an issue as we stand today.
Yes, because 2017, I've got plenty of time.
And also, it's the 15 and 16 in that example will be on a rolled basis.
Well, let's just use the IFRS 9. I don't know. Today, I have to assume that you're not changing the date. Well, no, I know you will. So I have to prepare IFRS 9 comparatives because I'm a quarterly reporter now. Assuming 15 is the date.
Why we put the question in the impairment document.
Which means so. we need to decide quickly, sooner rather than later, on the real effective date and keep to that and not change every so and say, yes. Well, yes, that's a point taken. Yes, we need to give you something.
Take your point.
Yes.
Anything else, Kevin, on that? Anybody else who would like to bring? We have like... Amazingly, we have caught up on time. Yeah. Any questions, any thoughts on two or three things that we spoke last time? Also, this issue about the ASAF, the new fund, the group we are forming. The announcement has not gone out about the members. Any update you're looking for on our ASAF? Any thoughts, anything?
I mentioned this at the XBRL advisory committee last week, and I was just a little surprised. Maybe I shouldn't have been with the composition of the group. And it's supposed to be standard setters. Is that correct? And maybe I'm speaking out of line and will offend people. I don't think of EFRAG as a standard setter. And so I understand there may not be a European continent standard setter, but I don't know if I understand why that wouldn't preclude one of them for filling that role or require Europe to try and work out, like other regions have, a regional standard setter. What little I know about it, but it does cause friction in my opinion, is I do not see EFRAG as a standard setter, maybe more of a political body, quite frankly, and I don't understand why they're being considered as part of that group, to be quite honest with you.
Please. I think the idea that the trustees are entertaining, that it's up to Europe to decide how it is represented. The Commission, the European Commission is the official standard setter because they set up the accounting directives. They are the ones who adopt the IFRS regulations. And the European Commission will decide on how they organize the European representation. So whether they think that EFRAG should be there on behalf of the Commission in addition to one or more European standard setters. That's the only thing can be said. You can make all sorts of comments whether you see that as a proper organization, but it's up to the Commission to decide.
So, do I understand it? Could the German standard setter be also on this?
Yes.
ASAF? I mean, so it's not just. But not just be.
I think, Malcolm, the trustees will announce the final nominations by a couple of weeks now.
Okay. We'll see. Actually, if I may, Bob raised an interesting point talking about XBRL, and so perhaps you could put someone update us on where XBRL is in the sort of SEC world as regards to IFRS.
It's not the question I thought you were going to ask, actually. But asked a worse one. The SEC, the way it is with the SEC, essentially, as you're probably aware, for foreign filers, there is no, because the SEC has not placed onto their website an approved taxonomy, then that means that foreign filers cannot file an XBRL at the SEC. I'm trying to think of the date it was. It was 2000, and it must have been from last year, I think, for filing. But you need to have an approved taxonomy on the website. So once the SEC approves a taxonomy, then it basically becomes a requirement, although they've assured us they give quite a reasonable transition period. In talking with SEC, there are about four separate issues that are causing us differences of opinion that we're trying to get through. The one is the use of definitions. They want to have every element of the taxonomy defined. Our staff have gone through and done a working exercise to try and add definitions. There are a couple of structural things in that we, in some cases, when you're presenting a table, we use a thing called dimensions. And the FASB's taxonomy, US GAAP taxonomy, also has dimensions, but not necessarily for the same things. So that is an issue. And the third thing is that there are some of the elements, we use slightly different names to the ones that the US GAAP taxonomy, they use revenues, we use revenue. And it means that the SEC is unable to consume automatically our data into their system. And they would prefer to be in a situation where they could simply consume the data without making significant changes to the software that reads the data into it. So we're working quietly with them in the background to address those concerns without undermining our taxonomy. Probably the bigger issue for us is that we're trying to fully integrate XBRL into our technical team and de-emphasize the XBRL, but get more into electronic reporting generally. So we've got some quite major changes the way we're going to operate our XBRL team here. But in terms of the SEC, it's also very difficult. They won't commit and say, if you do these four things, we will approve the taxonomy, because when we say add definitions, they would have to be definitions that they're satisfied with and so on. So we understand what the barriers are, and we're working with them to try and see if we can overcome those. I don't know if that helps.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've had a team on standby for a number of years now trying to follow developments. I just need to know whether I need to put more resources there.
You want us to see the snow falling?
Like it?
It's Christmas, huh?
It's Christmas. As long as it melts, it's fine.
Don't worry, London Airport is shut already.
Exactly.
Cannot worry, we have some food on water.
The other thing that's on the agenda is just the effect analysis and a couple of things in there. One is you'll see if you read the impairment ED, that built into the basis for conclusions is some analysis of the likely effects of the standard. And we're starting to do that all the way through our standards now. The basis of conclusion is including an assessment of effects. And we've tried to pick up, in conjunction mainly with the European Commission, because they're the ones who've been most, I guess, strongest in their views on what an effect analysis should look like. We've been trying to make sure that we respond to their needs. And in conjunction with that, we've now assembled a special working group to help advise us internationally on effect analysis. That includes the SEC is observing on that, plus the European Commission, and we have people from Canada right through Europe and Asia Oceania. And its first meeting is the 20th of May, so we're going to try and get, having got the concept of effect analysis built into our basis for conclusions, we now want to make sure that we've got a universally or globally accepted way of expressing the likely effects, so that hopefully anybody who's assessing our standards, whether that be in Australia, the US or Europe, is quite comfortable with the type of analysis that we're actually doing, including the extent of it, you know, because there is a limit to what we should be doing in terms of assessing effects.
Any questions, any thoughts on that?
Yes, sir, Hiroshi. I have a question regarding the timetable of conceptual framework.
Yeah.
But you have two topics on the conceptual framework and the disclosure forum. I'm just curious the timing of the timetable of disclosure framework. Is that included in the target discussion paper on the second quarter, or is that discussing it later?
You're going to discuss this later, but just very high-level thing is, Peter's, the conceptual framework will include some high-level disclosure principles. The disclosure forum is more what short-term things can we do to help improve the quality of disclosure and financial reports. So it is, and the when Christine Abbey come in here at 3:30 this afternoon, they'll show you the types of things we're considering for potential amendments to IS1. Quite narrow scope things, but trying to help improve the quality of disclosures. And then that work's come out of the more practical things that we were doing at the disclosure forum. So there are parallel processes, some in the framework and some standards level activity.
Okay. And also, Hiroshi, we can pick up that that particular question a little bit more in depth when we do the conceptual framework this afternoon. And please do bring it back, and we can talk about that. Yeah. Thank you, Sue, Alan, and Peter. And we will request Mr. Stewart to come. So based on the popular demand on the IFRIC, we have allocated 45 minutes to this topic based on last meeting's thing. Actually, we have put in, Lily has done a very smart job with Richard to put in a buffer of another 15 minutes if need be to go on. So don't be constrained to stick to 11 o'clock. We can talk if you need a little bit more because I think we have some room in the break session, so we'll not have break. I'm just kidding. But I think we have some time in the IFRS 8 to talk about if we need to overrun. So,
exactly.
Yeah. So with that, Michael,
okay.
On popular demand, you're back.
Fantastic. Thank you. Well, good morning, everybody.